Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals.
And gone!
Trust the same experts who make the right call for the Royals and go to kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Jake Gutierrez on this Victory Monday, December 3rd, 2018. We're now joined by Mr. Oaktown 357, Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm good. What's 357?
Old school stuff, man.
He's playing coy. Oh, man, Sam, that's slick, dude. That guy's slick. I get it.
What are you doing right now? You sound like you've been, you go for a morning jog or what? What's going on over there?
No, I just,
excited
you know, I
to
set
be on the
my
show?
Alarm and I'm just like really pumped up to hear your voice. And now, now it just happened.
See, I was thinking you almost sounded excited to be on the show, but I didn't want to. I don't want to jump to conclusions, but
Sam's the real MVP today, waking up early on the West Coast for us. So thank you, Sam.
Anything for you guys.
So let's get into it. Well, there's so much to talk about over the weekend.
There really is.
I mean, it's unbelievable. But let's start obviously with the story that everyone's been talking about since we were last on the air on Friday. A few things happened, including the Chiefs releasing Kareem Hunt after the video that is now infamous was released by TMZ, and then Kareem Hunt appeared on ESPN yesterday morning with Lisa Salters. I thought that was a bad decision by whoever advised Kareem Hunt to do that, and I don't think it came off very well, but there's a lot there. Just you take me through whatever you want to address first about the Kareem Hunt situation in the Chiefs.
Yeah, I was shocked that they did it. Absolutely shocked, and I think you guys know. I like to say, don't be shocked at anything in sports, right? You never know what can happen in a game and outside of it too. But I was just almost floored that they did it, just because I guess I'm cynical enough to think that teams can state principles. And they can say that they have, you know, morals and all these things, but way more often than not, they don't act like it, right? It just comes down to money. And if the kid is, if you're talented enough, you can get away with a lot, right or wrong. And a lot of times it's wrong. And, I was just, so when they, that last line, we are releasing Kareem immediately. I was just shocked and look, I get it. I understand like what they did. He lied, right? Like there was a path for him, even after what he did, for him to still be with the Chiefs. There's no way to prove this. It's a hypothetical. But I absolutely believe this and believe it even more after talking to some people in the organization that if he just says, if he calls the next morning, and he just says, I screwed up. I don't remember all that happened. I think it's pretty clear that people in that video were intoxicated. But I screwed up, and this is what I remember, and I did some things I shouldn't have done. I talked to the police, that kind of thing. I think the Chiefs look into it, find out that he hit her, that he kicked her, and he's suspended for, you know, up to six games, two games, four games, six games, whatever it is. But then he's still on the team now. Because then even if the video comes out, and by the way, I'm not convinced that it does if he does that. But if the video still comes out, then how can the Chiefs release him then? You know, if they say, like, we know all this already, and he's been punished. I think Kareem Hunt is still on the team. So... It was mishandled by Kareem a couple different ways, and that's why he was kicked off the team. And it's just, it's tough to say you feel bad for somebody that does that to a woman, right? But it's a situation that didn't have to happen. you know, the release. Obviously, the situation in that hallway that we saw did not have to happen, right? There were bad decisions that led to that. But then, you know, the release on Friday did not have to happen. Kareem had to really mishandle it that way, too. And, you know, it's an unnecessary, unfortunate result. But still, I am shocked that they did that.
Do you think the fact that they already have Tyreek Hill on their team factored into the decision?
I mean, it had to have, I guess, in some way, but I don't know. I don't think it did enough to make the decision, if that makes sense. Like, you know, that's part of the context, I guess. But at the same time, that part of the context says stay with him, right? That part of the context says, you know, you took a chance on a kid and you know, he learned his lesson, all that. I guess I'm kind of starting to stop him because I just think the situations are way different. I don't know that there's a comparison. What Tyreek Hill did, first of all, you know, I don't want to get into ranking, you know, violence against women, but I think we would agree that what Tyreek Hill did was significantly worse than even what we saw in that video. But he did it as a freshman, right? He did it years before he was a member of the Chiefs. He did it as a college kid. He owned it in a real way, publicly at least, and had already, by the time he got into the draft, had already been punished outside of the legal system. Football, you know, the industry of football had already punished him in addition to the legal system. What Kareem Hunt did, he did as a professional. I know he's a young man, but he's still a professional. He's an adult, you know, and he did it while representing the Chiefs. And I really believe that it's not, he lied, and that's what did this. But it's not just that he lied, like, in a way that you want to punish your kid for lying. I think the reason that it pushed the Chiefs over the top is that he lied lied in a way that made Clark Hunt look like a fool. He lied in a way that colored how Clark Hunt spoke about that publicly and privately to other owners. He lied about it in a way that colored how Andy Reid talked about it. He lied about, like, so his lie made all of these individual, Eric Bieniemy is another one. You know, they said things publicly because they believed him that they would not have if they had seen the video or if Kareem had told the truth. And that's the part, I think, that really pushed it. And also, let's also keep in mind that, you know, this was not a one-off. You know, I'm even willing to listen to the idea that if this was the first time that Kareem had ever been in trouble, if this was the first time that he had ever, you know, shown violent tendencies or just been involved in an incident like this, you know, maybe they could have said, whoa, okay, like, you screwed this up every way, but this is the first thing that we've ever heard of. But that's not it either, you know. You know, he's done this a few times. And, you know, even though, and I do believe this as well, even though he's, you know, something of a model teammate when he's in the building, you know, just in the football building when it comes to, you know, being on time for meetings, when it comes to, you know, being respectful to, you know, your teammates and being respectful to your coaches and being respectful to the other people that work in the building, you know, cafeteria workers and all that other, I believe all of that, that when he's, you know, sort of in the building on call during, you know, work hours or whatever, that he's a model citizen is still not enough when you make your bosses look like fools publicly to the people that they really care about. And I think that is probably what did it as much as anything.
Sam Mellinger joins us. Sam, you wrote about how this might affect the team in the locker room and the role that Patrick Mahomes will play moving forward. Not only is clearly the best player on the football team and playing as well as or maybe better than any quarterback in football, but his role as a leader in this locker room is accelerated even more than it already was before this. And so tell people that have not written, I encourage people to read this. I really enjoy the read. Well done, as always. But maybe sum up what you wrote about and how Patrick Mahomes' role expands now with the absence of Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, it's part of it is football, right? But so this is Patrick. This is his first real opportunity to lead, and we'll get to the football part of it in a second. But this is his first real opportunity to be that, you know, the leader of men, as they like to say. And this is what very much what the Chiefs have envisioned for him for a long time. You know, and it's a small but I think important part of why they traded Marcus Peters, even to sort of clear the way for Pat to be, you know, the voice in that locker room, you know, the unchallenged voice in that locker room. And he's already done all the right things, right? You know, last year when he wasn't playing, he was head down, work hard, you know, do all that. And now that he's QB1, he started to change that a little bit. He started to get a little bit more of a voice, not just in the huddle, but around the locker room. And I think that's important. But it's, you can't really be the leader until something hits you in the face, right? You know, you don't really need, you know, security until, you know, there's a reason for it, until you get an emergency. And this is absolutely as close to an emergency as the Chiefs have had since Pat has been the starting quarterback. And this was the biggest story in the NFL. It was obviously a negative. And not just all that, but Kareem was one of Pat's closest friends on that team. You know, I don't want to say closest, but he was certainly, you know, sort of in that small circle of his closest guys on that team. And so I think there's some eyes about, you know, oh, how's he going to react to this? And the way he reacted to it was to call a meeting and then later downplay that, by the way, which I think is another strong move by a leader. Call a meeting, you know, this is how we're going to handle this, and then go out on the field and handle it. And he was off, you know, I think you guys would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, he was a little bit off yesterday. You know, it seemed like his timing was off a little bit. There were some throws that, oh, he usually hits that. You know, certainly a ball or two, there's that one in the end zone that could have been intercepted and wasn't. But, you know, then at the end of the game when, you know, and there's no way to prove this, but I think if they don't get a touchdown, even if they just get a field goal on that last drive, I think they probably lose the game. So the defense was not very good yesterday.
You are correct. That is right, and I agree 100,000%.
And they get to that third and five at, what, about the 30-yard line or so? And that's a moment, right? And they drop eight. The Raiders drop eight. And, you know, 91, I forgot the name, but 91 comes around the left edge and has a shot at Mahomes, and he gets out of it. He just kind of runs through the sack, buys some time, throws this perfectly placed ball over the linebacker in front of the defensive back into Travis Kelce's hands for a 25-yard gain down inside the 10, I believe. And, you know, those are just sort of the kinds of plays where the only thing that mattered on that play is that the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. And because I think this is an important point, because what I was just talking about, the you know, the meeting and being the voice of, you know, hey, we still got this. You know, that's important. But I think people like, I want to drag you guys into this, but people like me, sports writers, like, I think we can kind of tend to, you know, overemphasize that kind of thing and create legends out of, you know, players only meetings. And I've always thought that's kind of silly because it doesn't matter if you can't then back it up on the field, because the Chiefs have had plenty of exemplary professionals, right? Like their last quarterback was terrific with, you know, sort of just, you know, being a leader and being, you know, a guy that his teammates can trust and all that. And I think he's a good quarterback. We don't want to get into that debate, but he certainly didn't have Patrick Mahomes' talent. And that third and five, you know, I think Alex would have called the meeting. I think Alex would have, you know, had the belief of his teammate. But on that third and five, I also think Alex would not have converted that, and they would have kicked a field goal, and they would have lost the game. And that's a huge difference. as well. And then obviously finishes it off with a touchdown to, that was the Chris Conley play, right? You know, on at least his third read, and he gets a touchdown. So I just, it was this moment of, you know, everything that Pat has is going to be tested, right? Like, because it's another thing to have the talent, but not have, you know, the stuff on the front end to get your teammates behind you and to try to get them focused. So he did that, but then more importantly, finished it off with, you know, 295 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions, 52 yards rushing on a day where, you know, it probably still wasn't his best, and he was still able to deliver that. It was kind of everything that you would want to see, the way that you would want your franchise quarterback, the guy that you plan to have on your team, the leader of your franchise, the voice of your team for the next 10, 15 years. This was the first real moment of adversity, full adversity. I'm not just talking about what happened at Denver when they had to come back at the end. You know, full adversity, and that's exactly how you'd want a quarterback to respond. And I just, you know, no offense to the end of Joe Montana's career, but they've just never had a guy like this. They've never had a guy who would be able to pull that off, I don't think.
Sam Mellinger is live in Oakland. We will take a break, and Sam will rejoin us for another segment. Sam, thank you very much for doing a couple of segments with us. We'll be right back with you after this. Have a nice conversation with Jake now in the commercial break. That's what you really want. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's get back to Sam Mellinger out in Oakland. All right, Sam, let's finish up with the Chiefs talk. And I'm glad, boy, that's the same thing I said at 6:30 a.m. About Patrick Mahomes and that final drive. That was a game-winning drive because if they don't score a touchdown, then the Raiders are going to score a touchdown if they were either down three or down six. That's what I believe, because the Chiefs' defense was they had checked out for the day. They were done for the day. For whatever reason, I think we know why, because the safeties cover no one. So tight ends cannot be stopped. Receivers that I thought retired last month, like Jordy Nelson, cannot be stopped, apparently. And so this is a concern. Now, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be for the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday, but they are 3-0 with Lamar Jackson, and he's the future. And so if Baltimore is smart, they'll start Lamar Jackson. So I'm hoping that Joe Flacco will get the call, because I think he'll be easier to defend than Lamar Jackson. And then you have the Chargers coming here, and boy, that is a scary proposition now after they erased the 23-7 lead the Steelers owned at halftime, and they beat the Steelers last night in Pittsburgh. The first time ever that the Steelers had a 16-point lead at home and lost. They're now 174-1-1 after having at least a 16-point lead at home. That's how that's what a miracle comeback that was for the Chargers, because they looked done at halftime. So, and then, you know, Seattle looks good at Seattle. So there's some tests coming up for this defense. Eric Berry may be back there, but still, that was unacceptable. They're getting to the quarterback, but the safeties, they can't cover, Sam.
The safeties are jaw-droppingly atrocious. It's incredible. And at the beginning of the season, I remember having this conversation with you guys on this very radio program about, and this was before Eric Berry was hurt. This was when Eric Berry was still healthy, and it was like, no safety depth. You know, Eric Berry's a good player, but, you know, other than that, who do they have back there? And, you know, they're exposed every single week. I just, you know, you can't emphasize this point enough, that they are playing Ron Parker every snap. And Ron Parker is a guy they cut because they thought he was done. And then Ron Parker was a guy who got cut by another team that needed safety help. And the Chiefs are playing him every snap. It's a real problem. And, you know, and the middle linebackers have not been good enough at all. I think the corners, you know, it's easy to blame the corners. They're the closest guy to the ball, you know, on these long completions. But they're getting no help. And when the tackling isn't reliable, when the tackling isn't solid and something close to not perfect, you never get to perfect, but when the tackling's not very, very good, the whole thing kind of breaks down. That's the way I'm starting to see it. And, you know, because there are moments when the defense looks better than it did in the first few weeks of the season, when the defense looks better than it did yesterday, it's because they tackle. And then, but as soon as they miss a couple tackles, even to the extent that the average NFL team would miss a tackle, you know, I'm not even like trashing the tackling, but when they're just an average tackling team, the whole thing tends to break down. And I thought that was part of the problem yesterday. I think the biggest problem, you nailed it, Stephen, I think is the safeties just are offering nothing. I mean, there's times where, you know, the defense is playing with nine guys because the safeties are just offering nothing. And that means that if D Ford's not getting to the quarterback, if Justin Houston's not getting to the quarterback, if Chris Jones is not, you know, having one of these snaps that you look back on and think, oh my God, they're going to pay this guy a lot of money. You know, on the rest of the snaps, which let's be honest is the majority, you know, they're getting burned because they're not able to tackle. And those corners, people hate hearing this because I blame them, but Steven Nelson, Kendall Fuller, and Orlando Skandrick are good enough as corners to be on a at least decent, and I would say even above average defense. But they need safeties. They need at least, you know, average safeties to help them out. They need at least average linebackers to help them out in front of them, and they're just not getting that at all. And there are moments where it's just it's exposed, but. Again, I know the Raiders are garbage. They're garbage on both sides of the ball. But we're talking about this, right? Like, the defense was pretty bad. And Patrick Mahomes was not his best. He put up 40, and they won the game. You know what I mean? Like, that's a game that even good Chiefs teams in the past probably lose, you know, 36 to 27 or something.
So does Eric Berry solve any of these safety problems that you just chronicled this season?
I think he does. I'm interested to hear what you guys think. I don't. He doesn't solve all of them at all. You know, and especially I get. Here's the biggest mystery to me though is what is he?
Right.
You know, I don't know how good he is. If he is the 2016 Eric Berry. You know, first team all pro Eric Berry, then we're really talking about something real, you know. I doubt that's the case. I don't know how you play three quarters in two seasons, you know, and then just come back and you're at your peak. He's about to turn 30 years old, I think, you know, so he's not an old man, but he's not 25 anymore. But if let's assume, just for argument's sake, because I think this is probably closer to what we'll see, let's assume he's 80% of Eric Berry. I think he does help them, and I think he helps them in at least two significant ways. Steven, you just talked about the tight ends, you know, and that has been a consistent problem all season. It seems like when it's free money for the other team. We saw that at the end of the Patriots game when they lost. We saw that at the end of the Rams game when they lost. When the other team needs to make a play, they find the tight end and see that he's covered by Daniel Sorensen or whoever, and they throw the ball to him, and it's a completion. And I think Eric Berry stops that. I don't know if he shuts tight ends down, but he certainly closes the door that you can't just come here. You know, this is no longer, you know, an ATM machine. I think he changes that. And then I also think that I think the communication, I get that he hasn't played with a lot of these guys, but I think the communication moves up, and I just – Eric Berry is different, you know, just sort of who he is. He's the most respected man in that locker room. And I think that can matter on some kind of smaller, intangible kind of way. But the most important thing is I think that at the very least, if it's 80% of Eric Berry, he can cover the tight end and do a representative, at least a representative job on the tight end. And even if that's all they get, that is an improvement.
Right, but my only issue is I have not seen him play in an organized football game in 15 months, and so it's
right.
Like, how could any of us answer that question?
Three quarters.
Right, I mean it's how do we know?
Yeah,
we won't know until he plays.
Exactly, and this is still part of a process because if he plays against the Ravens, and that was the last plan that I heard. But I still really, you're going to play him, and then you got a Thursday night game right after that. But anyway, if he plays against the Ravens, it's not going to be full time. you know, it's going to be on a very limited basis. So then he comes back maybe against the Chargers and plays a little bit more. But I still think that there's a process of working your way back in. Like, I don't think we're going to have the answer on what can this version of Eric Berry look like. Is he 100%? Is he 80%? Is he 50%? I don't think we're going to have that answer, at least until that Seattle game at the very earliest.
Speaking of tight ends, Travis Kelce is now on pace for 105 catches, 1,443 yards, and 12 touchdowns. There's no question, it's just a statement. So everyone celebrate that in their minds right now. I don't know what else to say about the guy.
He's incredible, right. Man. I mean, he's, he's either the best or the second best in the game. And, you know, it's at some point, are we going to have the Hall of Fame conversation?
Oh, and that's... He's on a better pace than Tony Gonzalez was at this point in his career.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes would be a good quarterback with average talent around him, and he'd be a good quarterback with below average talent around him. But, you know, Kelsey's kind of, you know, the guy that everybody has to, you know, Tyreek Hill, the guys on the outside worry about him, right? Kareem Hunt or the running backs, the guys kind of on the inside worry about him, but Travis Kelce's the one that everybody has to worry about. I think that kind of thing matters too.
That's exactly right. I mean, he's remarkable.
Yeah.
That was a two-man show that put the Chiefs on their shoulders and won that game yesterday.
I mean, if you go back to it, no Kareem Hunt, no Sammy Watkins, and one catch for Tyreek Hill, and Patrick Mahomes still threw four touchdown passes and almost 300 yards.
Yeah. That's well said. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's well said.
12 catches for 168 yards and two touchdowns for Travis Kelce. All right, we just have a few minutes left. And the other biggest topic, and there's plenty of them to talk about, but we would like to hear your thoughts on Bill Snyder officially stepping down and also who you think the next coach at K-State will be.
I was happy to see it. Maybe even relieved. I don't know if I have a right to have that emotion about it, but I just, there was a chance that was going to get really ugly. And I just, it would have been good for business, right? As the local, sports columnist, but I just, you don't want to see that. He deserves to be, he should be remembered for, you know, what he did before and not for hanging on too long. And I think getting out at this moment, makes that a reality. And I think that, anybody that's going to hang on to, any kind of fear or whatever, justified or not, that they had, needs to let that go. Absolutely, like, legendary career, one of the most influential coaches of this generation. I know people can talk about he only won, two Big 12 championships, no national championships, obviously. So his career is not going to stack up to, Nick Saban and all that. But, what he did, where he did it, what he took over and what he built, he changed college football, at least in the Midwest. And that's a pretty incredible thing to say about somebody. Who's it going to be? I don't know. Jim Levitt's always the name that people have been talking about. I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't gone that far to, kind of tell you anything intelligent about that part of it. I'm just glad that it's not going to be Bill Snyder and that people, that Bill Snyder Family Stadium is going to be, a place that, people can talk about without then going into, that guy stuck around too long. Like, I'm just happy that this is the way that it's ending.
It's going to be so interesting to see how KU and K-State play out moving forward now that you're going to have two coaches starting at the same time. And, I mean, for KU, I think most everyone describes that as a home run hire for Les Miles. And now it's like everyone looking at K-State, okay, match that. And that's going to be fascinating to watch over the next couple of weeks. Sam Mellinger.
It is a race.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but one quick thing. It is a race because I think that the talent at Kansas is probably a little bit better than the outside perception. And I'm not just talking about Puka Williams, but, it's just a little bit, it's at least a little bit better. And I think the talent at K-State is probably maybe a little bit worse than the outside perception. So, if you had the choice, you know, I think you take the K-State job. You know, it's just better infrastructure, better recruiting ties, all that. But it is a race. It is an absolute race, and I think it's a zero-sum game, too. I don't think Kansas is the kind of state that can have two consistently winning, you know, Division I football programs.
State's not big enough for the both of them. Who's it going to be, huh? Huh, Nate?
Oh, boy. True.
You should be excited right now. You should be vibrant and ready to attack the day.
Let's go. I would like to hear some more staff appointments for KU, you know. But we got one today, so.
Would you like to throw your name out there?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not qualified. Right,
cross you off that one.
I'll throw his name out there.
Yeah, we've already submitted your name for consideration.
Yeah, so. You should be in consideration.
Thanks for that. Probably get a pay raise.
We'll see what happens.
Short-lived job.
Well. What the hell does that mean?
I mean, I wouldn't last very long on the job. They would fire me because I'm not qualified.
No, you'd be in like head of a compliance.
Anything else want to get off the chest, Sam? I appreciate you calling in from the road, man. I know it's a little bit earlier over there, but you get the benefit.
No, man, you guys always like laugh when I say this, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, but you get to talk to Jake in the commercial break, so I know that's a bonus for you. You know?
Yeah, it really is.
We don't even charge you for that.
Right. Well, we should. Sam, thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks.
What do you guys talk about in the commercial breaks? Very animated conversation during this last commercial break.
It just depends.
Yeah, you couldn't tear yourself away from the phone.
You had a question for me.
Right.
Or
hold on, wait a minute.
Yeah, just
and another thing.
I'm talking to dignitaries.
What were you talking about?
We were talking about, he asked me how the rest of my trip went in California.
They ask you about inhaling and...
Say your voice is still struggling,
right,
buddy.
Oh, and this sounds great.
Did you put some more floors down over the weekend?
No, I didn't. I did not.
We're about the same level because after I ring announced the old 13 fight card.
Yeah.
Driving, I go, and I lost it. Oh, boy. And so then Sunday, I tried to not talk very much, which I'm going to tell you, what a thrilling day for my family when I can't talk as much.
Right?
It's like another holiday sprinkled in December. And so,
that same way, I could not, I could not speak on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and everybody around me loved it. It was like, what'd you say?
I quit.
Hey, Dad, I think your voice hurts again. I think you need to take another one of those days. You don't talk much.
We went to see Ralph Breaks the Internet.
How was it?
Hey.
I like the first one a lot.
No, if you like the first one.
I like Sarah Silverman and I like John C. Reilly.
No, we liked it very much.
Nice.
We're a good run of family movies that have come out for the holidays that have all been very enjoyable.
I saw the new Grinch when I was in California. Thumbs up.
Right?
I liked it a lot.
I told you.
Liked it a lot.
You called me a moron when I said go see it.
Well, you're still a moron.
Right. No, it had nothing to do with it.
Right. But good suggestion on the movie, but you're a moron.
But both of those were very pleasing to the entire family. So, not as good as Creed 2, though.
I haven't seen that.
Maybe if you play a Rocky song between now and 10 o'clock, we'll give away a pass or two to go see Creed 2 at an AMC movie theater. Just saying, maybe I got another one in my pocket. I'll check. Well, we'll find out. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.